Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Well, g'day, Blokes and Sheilas. Yes, we've hijacked it from way down south in the Southern Hemisphere. Welcome to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am your host for the rest of the week, John Fox here. I know it's been a hell of a long time since you heard me on air. But, you know, hey, this is what we got to do. Bob's off in D.C. checking things out. And, you know, this should be good fun. Now, there's tons to do. It's so good to be back on air. This could be a little weird today because, well, I'm working with a very, very kind of hodgepodge rig here. Thank you, Gail, for letting me use your laptop for such things, and, you know, we're going to do this thing. So, I know it's prayer meeting, and we might get to some of that a little bit later, but being that I've been patching this rig together for this morning, and, you know, just so you all know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning here. and I've got some of Bob's audio from the protest yesterday, which I hope to get to a little bit later. I have a little sound card confusion over here, so I'm going to try and work that out during the show. But, you know, listening to Bob's reports yesterday from the protest were just kind of, they were chilling. I mean, is it me or are these coal fiends just proving? Are they just proving that, you know, there's, Ben, are you telling me you're not hearing me? Because I'm showing that I'm sending beautifully. And, okay, everything's cool. Thank you. Okay, so, it's all very, very sketchy over here. but I reckon these coal thugs are just kind of proving the IQ loss from the pollution in the water. I mean, I was listening to these people, you know, the home tree huggers, you know, did you drive here? What the hell did driving have to do with bloody coal? I mean, these people are idiots. These people are absolute idiots. And I don't mean to be cruel, but, well, I shouldn't say idiots. That's probably a little unfair. It's actually really scared people. You know, these folks believe that they have no other option than to rip up these mountains as a way to support their families. And it's just so sad they can't see past the damage that's being done and the fact that the way that they're supporting their own families is actually doing them harm. Lottie says they're a good example of when evolution fails. Maybe it's devolution. You know, I was really worried about the Kincaids down at this thing yesterday. You know, I mean, when you're having a protest at a school, and the police feel the need to have a sniper on the roof. I mean, really. Anyone see anything wrong with this picture? And it's this thing where people just cannot see past their own front door, and it's so unbelievably frustrating. I mean, I think that this speaks to so many different problems that we have in this world. You know, it's not just in the United States, it's not just here in Australia, but people just can't see past. And, you know, I was having an interesting conversation with my neighbor. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with me and my show on Sundays, which hasn't been on for a while due to computer problems. I live in Australia. I live in this beautiful place called Woi Woi on the central coast of New South Wales, which is just this little piece of heaven, only an hour or so from Sydney. And, you know, we move up here, and lo and behold, my next-door neighbor is from Boston. He's been living here for, like, over 20 years. And he's kind of a conservative libertarian. And he and I have some really, really hysterical conversations. And, you know, he said, look, he said, you and I come down on opposite sides of the fence on a whole lot of issues. He said, but you know what? There's one thing that we have in common. I said, yeah. He said, we talk about all the stuff that goes on over in the United States. He said, yeah, but we choose to live here. And he said, I think that speaks heaps. But he made a comment. He reckons that regardless of the issue, America's hugest, biggest problem in general is the fact that that the United States is so slow to change. It's unbelievable for this nation that has, you know, grown by leaps and bounds over 200 years. We seem to resist change. I mean, a great example of this is the fact that you all are still using the imperial system of measurement. You're like the only ones left. I just find these things hysterical, this, like, inability to kind of join in with the rest of the world. And you can see this kind of just work its way down through, you know, subject after subject after subject. And a really good example of that is the financial crisis. I don't know if you all are getting reports of this in the States, but we here in Australia, our Labor government, fronted by Mr. Kevin Rudd, actually listened to what the economists around the world were saying and, you know, kind of bucked against the fear trend of, oh, stimulus is going to cause all this interest, you know, all this inflation and all this other stuff. And Kevin Rudd and the Labor government went and put together a pretty serious stimulus. Not just infrastructure programs and things like that, but they actually put cash in people's bank accounts. I mean, just cash. Go spend money. Not talking tax cuts. We're not talking any of the stuff that's like deferred till later. The entire nation got like around $900, some more, all depending on whether you had kids or not, to go out and spend. Now, I know this all sounds really, really crazy, but I bet it's not being reported to you that Australia is weathering this global economic disaster better than any developed country on the planet. And it's been hysterical because I watched the opposition here make all the same noises that Republicans do over in the United States. And they're going, you know, tax and spend, deficits. Ha ha ha. But they've been really, really, you know, they've had their heads handed to them because every Australian economist came back. We saw actually the downward trend slow. We actually watched the continuing rise in unemployment slow. And economists throughout Australia have been pretty well unanimous in saying that the stimulus worked. It did its job. It pumped some money into the economy. And, you know, remember, this money that the people were handed was their money to begin with. So, you know, everyone got to wear the burden and everyone gets to have some of the benefit. I mean, I don't see what's so hard about this. In extraordinary times, you have to take extraordinary action. And Kevin Rudd and his Labor government took the action that the people that know said we should take. Now, I kind of wish that Barack Obama would have Kevin come back over to the United States and take him on a little bit of a tour and let him tell the Australian story. Now, we're not out of the woods, and we do have some unique We do have a unique situation down here because we are a landlocked, an island nation. You know, we do have more of an internal economy. There's less of our economy that can be kind of dumped over across borders. So, I mean, we do have a little bit of insulation in that way. The other thing that we have is our central bank is probably the best behaved central bank on the planet. And one big reason for it is the fact that the bank board actually has a representative of the people on the board, someone from the current government. Okay, so it's, you know, even though it's a similar Federal Reserve type system, where it's, you know, private banks and all of that, which, you know, anyone who's been listening to me for any length of time knows that I have a serious problem with. And, you know, they've taken better action than virtually any other nation. Now, not saying that we're not feeling the effects. We're feeling it. I mean, probably the worst thing that happened when this whole thing started was, you know, someone decided that they wanted Australian coal cheaper, so over a weekend the Australian dollar got attacked and lost 40% of its value. You know, someone decided that this whole idea of the Australian dollar being at parity with the U.S. dollar just couldn't stand, so they had to get rid of that. But, you know, with that comes some benefits because, well, it makes our exports cheaper and all that. You know, bleh. But, you know, I watch what's going on in the States when it comes to, you know, the bank bailouts and all this kind of stuff, and it's just, it's so sad when you have this little country of, you know, just a little over 20 million people. You know, supposedly a welfare state. You know, we have that socialized medicine. And actually, it's not socialized medicine. It's called single payer. And see, in a single payer system, you can still have private health insurance if you want. And we're weathering this thing better than anybody. You know, and I think it just goes to prove that if we would actually listen to guys like Paul Krugman, we could get somewhere. And, you know, like I said, President Obama, if you're listening to this, I really think you should get Kevin Rudd to go on your healthcare, you know, town hall meeting tour. Let Kevin explain, help you explain to the American people that they should not be fearful of actually having health cover that they don't have to worry about paying out of their pocket for when they're sick and least able to do so. I'm just going all over the place, aren't I? Meanwhile, I've got this story that I was going to open up with, but anyway, you know, I got on the fact that, you know, down here in Australia, blah, 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 blah. So, but, you know, seriously, you know, you want to have some ammunition to send to your representatives about actually how to handle this situation? Check out the Australian media. Just, you can go and check the Australian ABC, the Sydney Morning Herald, even though Fairfax and all their papers have just turned really, really to crap over the last couple of years. You still can find the reports on how the Rudd government has handled this situation. Now, nobody's perfect. He's not a miracle man. But he listened to the people that actually understand how these things work, saw the fact that the previous government, you know, was all tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts, you know, cutting services. And actually, during the biggest resource boom in this country's history, didn't invest a penny. And when you do that for too long, you end up in a situation where you gotta end up spending money. You're gonna end up having to go into debt just to prop the whole thing back up a bit. So people can try and restart things. And Cossack is actually one of the stories in the chat room that I want to talk about, the Sanford numbnuts. I mean, oh, that's just too funny. But I have to go, this is such an unimportant story, but I really, really have to go here because Gail showed me this last night and I about wet myself reading it. Now, oh, you're going to love this. Yes, Sophie, this is live radio with me. But you're going to love this. Zimmer Frame Gang tortures advisor who lost $4 million. Now, I know that I'm laughing about the fact that I'm going to be laughing about actually criminal activity, but I'm sorry, this just cracks me up. This is out of the City Morning Herald. check this out. This is from June 24th. A group of wealthy pensioners who have been accused of kidnapping and torturing a financial advisor who lost about $4 million of their savings. The pensioners, nicknamed the Geritol Gang by German police, have, after an arthritis drug, face up to 15 years in jail if found guilty of subjecting German-American James Amburn to the alleged four-day ordeal. Two of them were said to have hit him with a Zimmer frame outside his home in Speyer, Western Germany, before he was bound with duct tape, bundled into a boot of an Audi A8, and driven 300 miles to a home on the shores of a popular holiday lake in Bavaria. During his alleged confinement in an unheated cellar, Mr. Auburn, 56, claims he was burned with cigarettes, beaten, and two ribs broken, was hit with a chair leg, and chained up like an animal. The incident began on Tuesday last week when he made his way home after enjoying a drink at an outdoor cafe with a friend. Mr. Amburn, the head of an investment firm called Digital Global Net, was allegedly attacked by two men aged 74 and 60 as he entered his apartment building. I had no reason to be afraid, he said, but as I went to my home, I was jumped from the rear and struck. He was left bleeding from his eyes, nose, and mouth, he said. They bound me with masking tape until I looked like a mummy. It took them quite a while because they ran out of breath. When they loaded me into the car, I thought I was a dead man. After being driven through the night, he arrived in a home of one of his captors and a 79-year-old wife in Chiming on the shores of Lake Chemise. As he was bundled into the cellar, another couple, retired doctors aged 63 and 66, arrived to join the alleged torture and humiliation. I was led into a cellar, recalled Mr. Amburn, who also has a home in Florida. I saw a folding bed and a WC, that's a water closet for you Americans, reserved for me, in other words, a toilet. They immediately went on about their money. I told him what I had told them before, that due to market conditions, unfortunately, it was gone. I was struck again and again. They threatened to kill me. The fear of death was indescribable. He then told them that he could pay them back if he sold some securities in Switzerland, and they agreed to let him send a fax to a bank there. He scribbled a plea for help on the bottom of the paper. It was disguised as a policy, he said. I wrote call.po-lice, and they didn't notice it. Not knowing whether his message would work, he attempted to escape when he was allowed out of the cellar on Friday for a cigarette break. He ran down the street, pursued by his captors in the Audi, and was seen by several people. Here's this is the bit that absolutely made me buckle over last night. But one of the pensioners shouted, "He's a burglar!" Passersby held him, and he was dragged back to the cellar. In the meantime, an employee at the Swiss bank spotted the message and telephoned police in Germany. Armed commandos stormed the house in the early hours of Saturday morning. 40 police, accompanied by a doctor in the light of the captor's infirmities, found Mr. Amburn in his underwear. Volker Ziegler, chief public prosecutor, said the pensioners were angry because they invested money in properties in Florida and had lost it. Subprime? This was black money they hadn't declared to the revenue authorities in Germany, he said. The pensioners faced charges of illegal hostage-taking, torture, and grievous bodily harm. I'm sorry, I think that's funny. I think that's hysterical! Here's the Hicks in me coming out. You know, Hicks used to say, you know, if you're in advertising and marketing, please go kill yourself. It's kind of how I feel about these financial people. You do the whole world a lot of good if you just take a gun, stick it in your mouth, and blow your head off. Because just look at the damage that you do. But the story comes via the London Telegraph. I think it's absolutely hysterical. I'm being with Zimmer Frames. I love the fact that, you know, I was scared for my life, but they kept running out of breath when they were trying to throw me in the boot of the car. Anyway, I had to share that with you. I thought that was one of the most hysterical things I have seen come up in a while. And it just goes to show that you constantly turn around and lie and screw people. They're eventually going to get pissed off, and these are a whole bunch of seniors. They're in their 60s, man. What the hell is wrong with the people in the United States that they just sit there and go, oh, well, when's American Idol on? I sure like that show. But hey. And then there's this Sanford guy. I know, I'm just kind of rattling off. But this one, you know, if you haven't been following this, Governor Mark Sanford kind of went walkabout, to use an Australian term. And the weirdest cover stories were coming down. Oh, he kind of does this all the time. He likes to, you know, his wife first said that he needed to write something and needed to escape the kids. Okay, I could understand that, but it was, you know, Father's Day weekend. And then the whole Appalachian Trail thing comes out where they said, oh, he's off, he's having a trek. He's walking the Appalachian Trail.
Did you know that it's nude hiking weekend this weekend?
No! Okay, that one doesn't work real well. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I'm just waiting to find out where the other woman is. And sure enough, he's off in Argentina. You know, and these people are, you know... You know, this is like always been my view of infidelity. You know, I understand people make mistakes, bad judgments, can be in really unhappy relationships. But man, it's got to be a lot of work. It's got to be a lot of work to constantly lie like that. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm too lazy. I couldn't possibly, you know, just say, yeah. Ben Birch thought he was in rehab. That almost would have been something forgivable. I thought if he had some sort of problem and needed help, That I could have dealt with. That I could have almost forgiven him for, you know. Especially if he had some sort of addiction problem where he was going and getting, you know, medical treatment for it, as opposed to being, you know, incarcerated for it. But I mean, this is just and you know, I started watching some of the video of him, you know. Doing this, and you know, at his press conference, you know, he's like, I've let a lot of people down. That's the bottom line. and and you know, if you get to the God's law and moral absoluteness and following one's heart. Well, I don't think he was following his heart. His heart sends a lot of blood to the thing that he was following. But, you know, and all this cover thing, you know, and this is the guy that went after Bill Clinton harder than almost anyone. Called him a rascal. He's a rascal. Well, you know what? You're a rat bag. You know, once again, overzealous right-wing judgment comes back to smack these people in the head. When are these people going to learn? And, you know, I was finding it kind of interesting, you know, like Rachel Maddow's been covering this thing pretty closely just because it just seemed all just way too weird. And, you know, the lieutenant governor was on, and I was starting to get the distinct impression that the lieutenant governor actually knew what the hell was going on. And he was more than happy to go on Rachel Maddow's program and say, hey, you know, this is all a little bit weird. Because I think he's probably sick of it. I bet that Lieutenant Governor has had to do some ass cover for Sanford, and he was over it. I mean, that's just me having a bit of a guess. But, you know, if I was the number two guy in a state or in a government of any type, and I was having to cover the ass of my boss who was going off to have his little root somewhere, I'd get a little sick of it. I mean, and many of you have probably been through this situation where you have a friend going off and having a thing somewhere and wanting you to cover for them. Which I think is one of the worst things you can do to someone that you consider a friend. I've been put in that situation before, and I've just flat out said no. And ELO says, well, his wife was whining over the weekend. She didn't know where he was, and to come find out, you know, she knew, and that poor woman was covering his ass to save her the huge embarrassment. It's amazing. It's amazing. All right, folks, are going to take a little bit of a break here. Let's see if I can start getting this little bit of a issue sorted out so we can do some of Bob's audio here from the rally yesterday. And we might not quite get to it till the next hour. It's going to take me a little bit of a fiddle about here to get it all kind of happening. So if I can find it, I didn't have this handy night before last or whatever time it was over there, when we were hoping to have the remote hookup that unfortunately didn't pan out. And I'm still confused how a sat phone couldn't connect even down there. I thought it was a line of sight thing. Hey, that's technology for you. But anyway, here's one for everybody. And this one's for ELO because I couldn't play it last night. We'll be back in a couple minutes. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. This is John Fox filling in for my good mate, Bob Kincaid. Enjoy some Franti. Stay human.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, a rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow. bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert, dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd, scratch my itch like a needle on the record, full of life like a man going to Mecca, sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring, baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning, 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 because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap, tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Call for backup and I'll give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and you're underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim we're not the practice of religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system to legalize you or give you your freedom. You want rights, ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns are still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by banging Tuscarosa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in a stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Welcome back to Head On with John Fox for the rest of the week. You reckon that look in California, feel in Minnesota thing is kind of applying to Sanford? And who's that other guy that kind of got his self-righteous ass handed to him? Ensign, the other guy. I mean, Cossack in the chat room's saying, you know, we have to work up some kind of special award for all these family values hypocrites, especially the right-wing or conservatives who make such a big deal of it. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, GOP hypocrite of the month has already been taken, and that's not even often enough. We need, like, the GOP hypocrite of the day. This is just nuts. Absolutely nuts. Soundgarden, gotta love him. You can tell when John's hijacked the show, it suddenly gets slightly heavier. Anyway, this whole Sanford thing is a riot. And all the other choking up. I've let all these people down. No, you got your ass caught, you dumbass. You're a moron. You're a self-righteous prick. That's what you are. You know, but this is just, I think this is going to continue to, you know, the GOP is going to continue to destroy themselves. Now, much of the media will still act as though that they're somehow in the majority. There was a great piece, I think it was John Amato over at Crooks and Liars talking about the fact that, you know, why the hell is it that we're hearing for every one Democrat talking about the health care issue, we're hearing 2, 3, 4, 5 Republicans. I mean, we're giving these people airtime as though that they're still in power. And it's just absolutely insane. But, you know, even with all that cover by corporatized media, they're still eating themselves alive. And, I mean, I couldn't be happier, you know, because what I'm really hoping is going to end up happening, and we're seeing kind of similar things, I'm telling you, what goes on politically in America, as far as the parties, it virtually happens identical here. It's hysterical, you know, it's like conservatives around the world pull the same crap, make the same claims, and end up being caught out. I might get into a thing that's been happening here in Australia if I can come up with a way to have it make sense and not be boring. But, okay. And I'm not going there now. But I do want to talk about this healthcare thing because, you know, I do think it's Obama's last chance to hold on to the left. If he does not come up with a strong public option, a couple of things are going to happen. One, he's going to lose the left completely. I mean, he's already losing us. I mean, you know, Gail and I were talking about this a couple nights ago. You know, during the primaries, we weren't real hot on Obama. And, you know, in fact, we were slightly dubious of him. And, you know, I was a Kucinich guy, like a lot of people on the network, looking at the reality of what the country needed and not votability. But, you know, we got caught up in all the hoopla towards the end as well. It's kind of unavoidable. It's really, really hard. And, you know, there's all that first African-American president, all that kind of stuff, that which is brilliant. And I keep trying to figure out, is it the fact that he's even more conservative than I thought? Or are we looking at a situation where the system is so corrupted from the inside by corporates that even with a guy that had some of the right intentions gets in there, you know, and they take him to that back room, and they're going, all right, boy, you had a good time making all them speeches, but now we're going to show you actually how things work in this town. You know, or, you know, because I can't call him a sellout because I never considered him to be left, you know, from the left. But, you know, he's really going to blow it. He's really going to blow it if he doesn't get this healthcare thing right. And aside from the fact that he'll lose the left, it really could be the last chance to save the nation. You know, I've been watching, you know, the talking heads over there all coming out and going, you know, socialized medicine is all gonna, you know, why should I pay for someone else's health care and again, short-sighted, stupid American thought process. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, and they come out and they lie. They find these people that talk about how broken the NHS is in the UK and how, you know, in Canada, you know, people are on waiting lists and all that. I had a conversation with one of my own family members, and I'm sitting there going, this is all bullshit. How long is it going to take before you come to understand that you keep hearing the same talking points over and over and over again? How about you go and find an American that actually went and lived in Canada or lived in the UK or lived in Australia or lived in France, a place where they actually have health care for everyone? Because you're going to find a different story. You know, my libertarian, you know, neighbor is totally, you know, he said, the for-profit medical system is a joke. And it's unsustainable. You know, no system's perfect. However, this whole bullshit about, you know, the government's going to tell you which doctor you can go see. No, that is wrong. That is a lie. I live in a place that has universal health care, no matter how much the last government tried to pick it apart. And all I have to do is find a doctor, and there's tons of them, because, hey, doctors think it's a really good idea, that does what they call bulk bill. Right? So, listen to that term, bulk bill, okay? What does that, Blue Ape, I agree with you. I wanted Howard Dean. The last time around, Howard Dean's my man. And he's not even the most left of guys, but he's smart. And he's a doctor. So I really think, you know, him out doing the rounds to try and counter the bullshit that's being talked about is good. And, okay, so what they do here is they bulk bill. Now, not all doctors bulk bill, and many specialists won't. And that's a bit of an issue sometimes. But instead of having every doctor having to do paperwork for each individual patient with each individual insurance company, if they're a bulk billing doctor, they process it all in one shot. how much money does that save in just processing and administration costs? But then you dig a little deeper, and for much less than America pays per person for health care now, with a single-payer system, which still leaves you private options, it will cost everyone less and everybody gets covered. I mean, how hard is this? I mean, I've had discussions with a particular couple of members of my family, and I sit there and I start slamming the phone into my own head. I go, socialism! And, you know, I go, you like having a fire department, you moron? I mean, really, open up your eyes and your ears. Look what's going on. You say that the system's broken, but you refuse to do anything about it. Because of some stupid ideological stand that everything's got to be for profit. And there's still profit to be had. But if we actually had, in the United States, a single-payer system where costs are controlled, advertising doesn't need to be paid for, you know, you're not having, you know, boards to pay profits to, it will end up showing what a ripoff the private monopoly, or, you know, because, I mean, when you look at it, it's not a monopoly, but you have all these private insurance companies that basically price fix, right? It's collusion. Because they have nothing to actually be compared against. And, you know, when I hear this crap about waiting lists, I sit there and go, wait a minute. Okay, so, all right, you need some sort of surgery, and it's not life-threatening. You know, like tonsils need to be taken out or some crap. Okay, yeah. You get on a list, but it's not a waiting list. And even if I had to wait a week or two, which probably you'd have to wait a week or two in the for-profit system, what about the waiting list of all the people in America that are not insured and can't actually get the care that they need? We talk about, you know, they talk about waiting lists, and they don't talk about the unprotected list. And Lottie, because Lottie's saying, you know, it's the idea of government involved in health care. The real reason they oppose it is because they want to see the poor die off, not get health care. Now, I agree with you. But, you know, if they keep killing off the poor, who are they going to have do their menial jobs for them? Oh, that's right, there will always be more poor, as long as you keep them uneducated and tell them that birth control is wrong. Just keep breeding them worker bees. Just keep breeding them worker bees. But, you know, a great example of the benefit of having some sort of health care coverage for all. My Mrs., when she went through chemo, if we'd had to pay for that ourselves, she'd still be ill. And if that were the case, as time went on, and the illness started to really affect her, she'd be a bigger burden on the system. So, I mean, we're talking about prevention here. We're talking about improving the health of the nation. You know, and you know, even in the UK, here, the right-wing parties wouldn't ever dream of trying to kill the single-payer systems. They wouldn't dream of it. Because they know, well, for one, once people have it, they'll never give it up. Yeah, they're you know, like with anything, there's constant, you know, having to deal, you know, tweaking things here and there and dealing with issues as they come. But those problems are infinitesimal to the situation when you don't have it and you have a whole bunch of really, 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 really sick people. It just, it blows me away. You know, and the Germans have a different system. Theirs is a little bit different. Theirs, everyone has a private health insurance, but it's regulated like a utility. And if you end up unemployed, the government pays your premium. So you can stay with your doctors that are connected to... See, this is another one of these things. You know, like in Germany, if I remember correctly, your doctor that you go to will actually be chosen or limited to those that are billing to the insurance company that you're with. Okay? So don't talk to me about the government, you know, telling you which doctor you can see. It's the private system that tells you even more often who you can and cannot see. But there, they say, okay, we let these insurance companies handle it. It's heavily regulated. And in a situation where people are unemployed, they then will pay for your cover until you get employed again. There's no extra paperwork. There's none of this stuff. So it continually saves money and keeps people healthier because a healthier workforce is a more productive one. Where, you know, the physical conservatives, where the hell is your logic when it comes to this issue? I don't even know anymore. Maybe someone in the chat room can tell me. If you have to go to just your regular, you know, GP, your general practitioner for, you know, you've got some sort of a bug or, you know, flu or whatever, what does it cost you for just the walk-in visit? I'm just curious, you know, on average, you know, how much... I'm hopefully going to get a response in the chat room here in a second. You know, just for a doctor, standard doctor's visit, not talking about prescriptions, no x-rays, none of that kind of stuff. Just to see a doctor, what do you need, even if you're insured, what do you need to pull out of your pocket? I mean, here, you don't have to pull anything out of your pocket. But what's billed to the government is something like around $40. And I think this also goes to the point that, you know, except for the United States, people who go into medicine, okay, thank you, cost between $50 and $100. Lottie says he pays $125 just to see the doctor at a clinic. Okay, you're paying $125. That would probably be, at the moment, $150, $160 Australian. So you're paying four times more for a doctor's visit out of your pocket than the Australian government pays a doctor for a visit in our system. And it's all paid for by what is known as the Medicare levy, which, when you do your taxes, a percentage of your taxes goes straight into the Medicare levy if you don't have private health insurance. And they played some games which were wrong back in the last government, where if you take private health insurance, the government will pay 30% of your premium, which is really stupid because that's just taking money out of the public system and handing it to private corporations. I think that's asinine. And, you know, and this is the idea, you know, again, but then Cobbs says, you know, with Medicare in the United States, $15 to see Dr. Hess. And that's, see, now you're kind of getting reasonable. But see, I still think that, you know, if you're just going to go see the GP, you know, in the initial visit when you fall ill, the fact that you'd have to pull money out of your pocket at all is just insane. It's absolutely insane. I think this is one of those things, and probably people who have lived outside of the United States and get outside the bubble suddenly get this big wake-up call, like going, oh, wow, other people can do things differently and it can work. Now, you know, and I hear other arguments, you know, where's the research going to come from if they ain't making money? Hey, you know, before the system got out of hand, the research was done. New drugs and new treatments were developed in medical schools and universities. And then that was, you know, made for use by the general public and its common good, and not copywritten or patented for mad profit. You kind of following me here? Holy crap, Lottie! And a procedure costs $47,000. Wow! I mean, really? You start seeing numbers like that, and it's like, okay, you have to be one rich son of a bitch to be able to, like, survive, to live. It's insane. But, you know what? We're coming up on the end of the first hour, and I might try and see if we can get some phone calls happening in this next hour. So let's find a bit of music to take a little bit of a break. I need to go get a cup of coffee. And let's see, we're going via Gail's music here, because, well, the Monster Drive is not online yet, which is unfortunate, but she's got some really cool stuff. Let's see. Oh, yeah, we'll go here. Mr. Jim White. Off of The Mysterious Tale of How I Shouted Wrong-Eyed Jesus, here's a beautiful song. Still Waters. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. Subbing is the one, the only John Fox. Coming to you from the central coast of New South Wales, Australia. And we'll see you at the top of the next hour. This is Activist Radio. You're on the horn.
later, well, that's just hiking to the ocean.
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Oh,
right, everybody, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am your temporary fill-in host, John Fox, coming to you from the beautiful bit of paradise known as the central coast of New South Wales, a little town called Woy Woy. And all depending on where you read, Woy Woy either means deep water or much water in Aboriginal. I just reckon it was water, water. but anyway, this is a beautiful place where we live. A place called Ocean Beaches, but a bike ride down the road. And, you know, Gail and I moved here from the city a couple of months ago, and the best thing. I've never felt healthier since getting out of the polluted septic dump that is, unfortunately, Sydney. It's become the most polluted place in this country, and it's really bad. So I had kind of, you know, talking about the Sanford guy, you know, so, you know, out hiking. I think he was hiking the Twin Peaks in Argentina. Oi, 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 oi. Oh, hypocrisy. It's a game that's just so fun to watch. But anyway, we got the phone line open now. I'm doing this via laptop, and I usually don't have both of these things happening on the same machine, the thing that sends the show up to Ben Birch's wonderful servers, and also running the phone. So we're going to give this a go. If it causes problems with the stream, we'll have to kill it, but we'll give it a go. So unfortunately, it's on y'all's dime today, so if you feel like calling in, it's 304-574-7811. That's 304-574-7811. You know, ring in. Remember, this is conversation radio, and just never into the idea of just, you know, babbling all by myself for the entirety of the 3 hours. Tell you what, it's still cold down here. You know, that's a thing. Y'all are all in summer, and we're actually in winter. Not like I can really complain about winter in Australia, but it does get kind of cold here. And where we live up here, there's actually a mountain ridge on the one side. So, you know, kind of during the winter, the sunshine is really kind of cut down. And just noticing I can see my breath kind of in my own studio here. I guess that's probably from the coffee I'm drinking. Pardon me while I snag some of that. But before we went to the break, I was ranting about the just recycled lies about universal health care that are happening in the States again. You know, this is all just like rerun of, you know, the Ronald Reagan album. Ronald Reagan talks about universal health, socialized medicine. You know, it's the slippery slide down to communism. What a bunch of bullshit. Absolute bunch of bullshit. Hey, by the way, welcome Mike Malloy folks on the stream. Such an honor to be on Mike's stream there later and replay. I hope you're enjoying what you hear. You probably, those that have been listening to Bob, suddenly hear this guy with an accent that you can't even quite pin down, and just seems like he's a little bit insane. But that's from, I don't know, many years of touring with rock bands and the like, and hey, I hope you're enjoying it. Anyway, because big fans of Mike and Kathy, been good friends of ours for a while, and you might even remember some of my parody music, which has been played on the Malloy Show over the years. But getting back to this whole healthcare thing, I really think that this is probably the most crucial issue at the moment. It's going to make all the difference in the world. Not only for the well-being of the American people, But it's going to make a huge difference when it comes to the economic trouble that the whole world is in. You know, everybody's struggling with stuff, but you have a system over there that, aside from killing people, is really expensive. Really, really expensive. Now, just popping in the chat room is our good friend Angry Architect, who's an Australian. And his family live in Iran. And I'm hoping to hear from him here in a moment if he knows anything about what's going on. I might actually sidetrack onto this a little bit, because I've been finding this kind of as a self-taught media student, this whole uprising in Iran fascinating. From just a media standpoint, with the way that the media has been shut down, but yet with all these, you know, with the new media outlets that are out there and clever people that get a message, get a video to someone in the UK who gets it uploaded to YouTube and suddenly it goes viral. And I mean, it's been really challenging because you're not sure what you can believe, you can't corroborate things. But when we were getting the whole story out of just corporate media, we didn't know how to take things either, for other reasons. So, but I've been finding this interesting, and everything has been taken a really, really, okay, I'm being corrected, Angry is just telling me that his family is actually, they live here in Australia, but have been on holiday. They're up by the Caspian Sea at the moment. And he had mentioned to us before that they're, outside of the city and really hadn't been seeing what we've been seeing, and this seems to be happening, more in Tehran but, I don't know if you've seen this stuff that the Iranian media has been broadcasting recently, which are these, so-called confessions. And I find this really interesting because I tell you, I really don't know how to, I really haven't come up with an opinion on what's going on over there. It's the cynic in me. It's, I just never know what the CIA is up to. It's always in the back of my mind. What covert crap are we up to? And, I can never kind of get that, what if out of my head. However, and then you put in the fact that Mousavi is not, he's not any great progressive. Ooh.
We had the phone call.
Hey, is this Betsy?
I guess that,
No, it's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie, how are you?
Good, but I'm at Betsy's house. I'm on her phone.
Okay, well, that's why it came up on my phone saying Betsy.
Oh.
How you doing, darling?
I'm doing good. I wanted to talk about Iran and also talk about Governor Sanford.
Please
Can
do.
Can I talk about her?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so about Iran, you were just talking, I just shut the, when I shut the, what do you call it?
Stream.
The, Yeah, the stream, the speaker. When I shut the stream, you were talking about what we're on TV and stuff.
Yeah.
And all of the people who think that somebody's going to believe them, here's my question. If you were to take one of the guys from Gitmo and get them to do a confession, don't you think it would be exactly the same?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I refer to them as so-called confessions, because just even what they were blurting out, that, you know, like I was saying, I always have reservations in these situations, never knowing what our covert agencies might possibly be up to. I just don't see when you have people saying, you know, it's Voice of America Radio and the BBC that made me go out and riot and thieve, I just don't think that's going to work or wash with as unbelievably an educated population as the Iranians. I mean, they're really, they're not stupid people. They're really, really, it's a modern society.
I think that, I don't know, if it's supposed to convince anybody, it's like supposed to convince the left wing here or the right wing or something. Like, I don't know. I think it's supposed to make us not trust that it's real. I don't think it really would have any effect on them. I think we're the only ones who are stupid enough to...
It also, to me, seems like actual grasping at straws. If generally the story that we're kind of getting from over there is true, that this is a people's uprising where, the so-called reform candidates, you know, aren't necessarily big reformers. And I think that they may have now become... this is not about the platform that they were on. This is about the justice of an election. And so Mousavi has now become the figurehead of an uprising, but he's not necessarily, you know, that much different from Ahmadinejad when you get right down to it. So I think this has a lot more to do with people than it does actually with any of the candidates.
Well, I think that for the United States, for people here, I think that this is like the one in, I think it was Georgia, that we didn't pay enough attention to, but this one we are. I think that this is going to make us rebel if someone tries to steal our election again. Like we didn't do this in 2000 and 2004.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't know if the American people have it in them. I'm starting to really become of the opinion that too much of America has just become so unbelievably apathetic to everything that, you know, I'm not sure what will make them finally get up and stand the way the Iranians have. And you have that unique situation in Iran, Cass, where, you know, 70% of the population is under 25.
Yeah.
That is a huge factor, I think, in what is going on. You know, and so you have, you know, with these fake confessions, you have the old guard trying to pull the old tricks, and they are clueless when it comes to the new media outlets that are actually kind of running the show on this thing.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know what, you know, I don't know completely what's real about it.
No one does.
But one thing that I read today that made me think was that we are spending 3 days, I think it's 3 days, mourning one woman from Iran, and how many have died in Pakistan today and how many have died in Iraq today that we're not mourning?
There is that. But I think the situation with this young woman that was killed in Iran, I think because martyrdom is actually a very important thing in certain cultures, that she was immediately always going to become an icon of this struggle. And so, yeah, there's been all this focus on that. I was just reading about, you know, more drones, you know, hit like a wedding or something in Pakistan.
Yeah, that, and 50 or 60 people.
That stuff makes me want to vomit because, you know, I think the idea of sending drone aircraft, remote controlled and all that, is about as cowardly as you can be. You know, I don't think it's an honest way to fight. Go ahead, Cass. Sorry.
Isn't the point of it so that it doesn't hurt American lives? I mean, aren't the drone aircraft supposed to only hurt? Are they supposed to be like more targeted?
Well, they're supposed to be, but it basically means that, you know, if it gets shot out of the sky, we didn't lose an American pilot. But and I don't know if this was by accident or not. Just I think it was day before yesterday. They show MASH here on one of the television channels, and one of my favorites, Hawkeye, is, you know, bandaging up this pilot. Who talks about, he's like, you know, I couldn't do this war if I had to be on the front line like you guys. He said, you know, when you're flying up there, it's beautiful, the sky is blue, and you get to a point, you get a call, and you just drop your load. And the way it was just like, oh, it's just so beautiful to go and fly up in the sky, you know, you've never actually seen the people you've killed? No. And I think that it's an extension of that, where It's the dehumanizing and apathy for, you know, dehumanizing people for one, the others, the ones that we're killing, and then, you know, again, finding ways to disconnect the people who are actually having to go out and do this from what they're actually doing, you know.
Well, that's why the Army, when they're doing recruiting and other stuff, that's why they have all of the video games.
Because
they want to make it look like shooting a gun and killing people isn't any worse than what you've been doing on, you know, your Xbox.
Oh yeah, and you, I don't know if you know this, Cass. You know all the like plastic guns and stuff you can buy for kids that the weapons manufacturers actually send the real thing to the toy companies so that they can make them as realistic as possible. And I think that that's really scary stuff. I think that we kind of program kids from an early age to, you know, be really apathetic about death. And, you know, some people will say, oh, you know, you're making, you know, a big deal. You know, people play, you know, have been playing Cowboys and Indians for years. And, yeah, that's fine. And so did I. I usually ended up playing the Indian, not the Cowboy. But, you know, there's a difference, though, than when you actually hand a kid a plastic AK-47 and get them feeling, like, really comfortable with that thing in their hand.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, my brother's in the Army, and he wanted to do it since he was 4. I mean, he was 4 years old when he decided he was going to go into the Army.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And at 5, he decided that he, you know, he wanted to be a mechanic and fix cars. And now he's an Army truck mechanic. You know, it's what he wanted since he was little, but I, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, I actually have great respect for people that want to serve their country and put their life on the line, but I think, you know, over the last, you know, better part of a half a century, the use of the military has become about protecting capitalist interests and not American interests. And as in the interest
more of than that, more than longer, because you have to go all the way back to the wars in Cuba and Panama.
Oh, yeah.
In the 1890s, and that was the same thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've always had a bit of this, but it's become more the primary objectives, and you know, from World War One on, you know, the Schmedley Butler book, it, you know, he talks about all this, you know, that war is the only thing where the gains are counted in dollars and the losses are in lives, and you know, there's something really wrong and broken about this, I see the fact that, you know, nothing's changing even with Barack Obama in the White House. I mean, really, nothing's changing. It's systematic, you know. It makes me wish that in America we had a thing like our in parliamentary systems called a double dissolution election, where if the... they just can't get anything done. Nothing can get passed. The government that's in power can actually go and dissolve the entire House, you know, Congress and Senate, and vote in a new one. They all go. I think that would be huge.
But sure, people would be afraid to do that.
Well, this, you know, you kind of came in.
They're afraid to vote anyone out. People wouldn't do that here.
This goes back to you probably came in after I talked about this. You know, I've got an American neighbor, and he and I are on different sides of the fence politically. But he said, you know, we can talk all we want about what goes on over there. He goes, we choose to live here, so that actually shows, you know, where we're similar, and we see that even though we see different ways of fixing it over there, we both understand that it's bloody broken. And he was talking about how America itself is so slow to take on change. And I think the idea of being scared to actually dump an entire government and vote in a new one at the drop of a hat, you know, once certain requirements, you know, once certain things have been shown to be true, is just another sign of that. You know, I said that the simple example is the fact that you all still use feet, yards, and miles. You know, that you haven't actually joined the rest of the world in using the metric system, which actually, you know, is so much more efficient, so much easier, and it's actually what science still does all their work in. Because you can translate the mass between linear measurements and volume measurements, and it's all this one-for-one kind of thing, it makes it all very, very easy and very straightforward, none of this conversion nonsense.
Well, we use it for science.
Right, that's what I'm saying, but in society in general, it's just complete, you know, no, we can't do that, you know, it's like, it's the imperial system, and even the UK gave it up. You know, and so, again, I think that this is one of America's great failings in general, is its inability to actually change.
Yeah.
In any way. Aside from Iran, what else was it that you wanted to talk about? Oh, Sanford, right?
Governor Sanford, yeah.
I was just saying, you know, he was climbing the Twin Peaks. Sorry, go ahead.
How stupid is he?
Self-righteous?
I mean, well, did you listen to his press conference, news conference?
I only got to listen to the first couple of minutes, and
he kept insulting the press. Every time they'd ask him a question, he would say, obviously. If I did that at school, I'd have zeros for the day. If I answered questions the way he answered them.
He was backed into a corner, Cassie. He'd been shut, you know, I mean, that whole...
Yeah. And the Republicans are giving him credit for being a man and going out there. It's like, yeah, that's after he lied about it and after he had everybody on his staff not even know where he was and after... His wife, they're just, now I saw something that his wife asked him to leave 2 weeks ago, but now she's been, like, defending him and saying that he was, you know, hiking and getting away from the kids and writing a book. And, like, the whole thing, it's like, if he wanted to just go on a trip to Argentina, all he had to do was tell the press, you know, I'm going to Argentina to sell South Carolina something or other. Or
well,
to buy something, right? Like, but it would never have gotten to where it is. It would never. Like, there were a million cameras, and there were, like, millions of people watching. Why? Because nobody knew where he was.
Right. And
nobody cares if he's actually having an affair. That's the, like, so what?
We only care when you're lying about it. We only care when you're lying about it, which actually starts to show something about your character, you know. And I just think, you know, the whole thing's hysterical. I don't know if he could have gotten away with saying that he was going over to Argentina for some sort of specific reason. But if he'd even notified that he was taking a few days off to recharge...
Right.
And put his lieutenant governor officially in charge, which is what you would normally do in that situation, I think a lot of people wouldn't have even batted an eye at it, you know, and he could have gone off and
they wouldn't.
And I think his lieutenant governor had it with him, because the fact that he was on Rachel Maddow's show going, I have no idea where he is. He kind of does this once in a while. I think his lieutenant governor knew exactly where he was and was kind of sick of it and thought, you know what? This guy shouldn't be the chief guy of the state if he's just going to go bugger off to go climb the Twin Peaks of Argentina.
Well, yeah. The whole thing is so crazy. And he said during the press conference that he wants the press to put a, a cone of secrecy or some sort of thing of privacy around his family. And it's like, why wasn't he protecting his family from the press that weekend? Like,
because he's selfish and was protecting himself.
Such an idiot. He's such a.
Well, you know, I mean, this is the whole you know thing about hypocrisy. Everyone's human. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone does things that they wish that they hadn't done. All that kind of thing. But when you go and stand, this is the problem with the conservative right. You know, they get up on a soapbox. You know, this guy was one of the most vicious people in attacking Bill Clinton over the whole Lewinsky thing. And,
uh-huh.
You know, and so this is what ends up doing the damage is just the hypocrisy. And when you get shown up for being the hypocrite that you are, it's not about your indiscretion. It's about the fact that you're dishonest with yourself and you've been dishonest with the people. And when you're a public servant and people feel that you aren't honest with them, you shouldn't be in office.
Right. And he's only in favor of marriage between one man and one woman. And it's like, isn't there an extra woman in this one?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
like...
Hey, at least he and Ensign are a step up. They've at least been found to be with people that were female and of age. So
an adult.
Yeah. So I mean, like, you know, it is a step up for them, but it's the it still comes down to the hypocrisy.
My dad left my family when I was little,
mm-hmm.
and like just walked out away from all of us. And okay, like, he can do that. But if he ever started to run for being governor, I would be on the news so fast and tell them exactly who he is.
Well, you know, I mean,
I don't know how old Governor Sanford's kids are, but
I feel really bad for those kids.
He's such an idiot. He's so stupid.
He's selfish, Cassie. That's
he is selfish. Yes.
That really is it. You know, if you're going to go on Father's Day weekend to go and see your mistress in Argentina, that is selfish. You know, and then it feeds right back into hypocrisy, because I'll guarantee you this, you know, he's one of these guys sitting there going, you know, family values, I loves my family, you know, and that whole thing, you know, one man, one woman nonsense, and they end up being shown to be completely full of crap.
He kept talking about Christian forgiveness at his press conference.
Mr. Judgmental, you know, he wasn't very forgiving of Bill Clinton, was he?
I didn't read about, but...
Well, I mean, he called Bill Clinton a rascal. He was one of the most fervent people to...
But rascal's not of that, I mean...
But there's...
Rascal's not impeachment.
No, but I mean, he was all for the impeachment, you know. But, you know, he was constantly insinuating, you know, what a bad guy Bill Clinton was and how, you know, he didn't deserve to be in office. And you know, again, like I said before, you stand up on the soapbox and make these statements and then go and conduct yourself in a similar way and actually handling it even worse than Bill Clinton did. Because, I mean, the one thing that I've always thought about with Bill Clinton, you know, when whatever happened with Monica Lewinsky and where, you know, he, you know, stood up and kind of lied to the camera and said, you know, I had never had relations with that woman kind of thing. In any situation where that happens, you know, almost anyone's going to try and cover their ass at first, you know. And it just, I, you know, but Bill ended up eventually kind of taking the heat for it. And I think that his marriage would have been dead if it hadn't been for his daughter, by all reports. So, you know, the hypocrisy just kind of gets stacked up on top of hypocrisy, you know. Yeah, Bill did virtually the same thing, but Bill wasn't making bullshit cover stories about going hiking. And
right, and he didn't leave the whole state for the weekend and not put someone in charge.
Yeah, and that shows very little duty of care for his position, because, you know, I think when you get elected to public office, your first duty is to the public that elected you. And obviously he really didn't see that as being as important as going off and having a bit of a thing.
Well, I am working at Subway this summer. It's just, I mean, it's a job, right?
Yeah.
If I went for 4 days and didn't have a good excuse on where I went and didn't, like, I'd get fired in 10 minutes.
You could even have a good excuse and you would have been fired.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just the way American capitalism kind of works. It's very fascist in nature. You know, in the system, you basically give up all your rights the second you walk into the job. And so, you know, in that idea, it, you know, you could have been... total, you know, you could have been in hospital having been hit by, you know, been in a car wreck. And they have every right to just fire you.
Well, that's the only excuse that he could have come up with that would have been okay. Would be if he got hurt and he didn't have his ID on him and they didn't know who was in the hospital.
Right, right. Well, you know, I mean, but it, I really think... go ahead.
Yeah, everything else is like his fault. Like, if he couldn't manage that one, then, you know.
I think the funniest thing too is, you know, when they came out with the Appalachian Trail hiking excuse, and then someone does a little bit of research on the trail and finds out that it's nude hiking weekend.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I was watching last night. There was a documentary on Larry Flint, you know, the guy who publishes Hustler, and it was actually all about First Amendment rights and whatnot, and showing all the court battles that he's been through. And one of the lawsuits that he faced was one of the televangelist preachers, you know, and all in the media was the pornographer versus the preacher, right? And Larry Flint ended up winning this case. And so a couple of years later, when another televangelist preacher was found with his mistress and all that, they found also there a Hustler magazine, which Larry Flint just thought was one of the greatest bits of karmic justice he had ever had in his life, because these were the people that were ripping him for what he published, and it wasn't about the... it was Jerry Falwell. Thank you, Gene. But actually the reason they were going after him was because of his political commentary. It had nothing to do with girly pictures or anything like that. It actually had to do with the fact that Larry Flint was actually very, very anti-war, anti-corporate, and telling a bit more truth through satire than most people did. And that's the reason that he was a target for years. So, you know, I see this thing last night, and then this morning I get up and I see the whole bit about this Sanford coming out about the affair, and I'm just going, wow, it's like, it's almost like a script, a reoccurring script.
Yeah.
The things you.
Just going back to the Bill Clinton thing.
Yeah.
You know, I was born in 91, right?
Right.
So I wasn't, like, aware.
Obviously.
Of what was happening with him until,
right.
years later.
Right. So, but, you know, and basically all it is, you know, it comes down to, you know, guy in power, very charismatic, ends up having some sort of relations with an intern. That's basically
right.
That's basically what it came down to. And when he got caught out for it, he tried to cover his ass. And because the Republicans have this thing that no Democratic government is ever legitimate, just rode this thing as grounds to impeach him.
Yeah.
You know, which is just kind of, you know, which is, you know, it's a mode of operation as opposed to, you know, trying to do anything that's just or right. They were kind of trying to find any excuse to make this guy illegitimate and get him out of office. And probably because they were frustrated that he, you know, I've said this many times, Bill Clinton was the best Republican president in modern history. Because if you look at his policies, they were very Republican in nature. But by the end of it,
the Republicans didn't like him.
No, because
he had a D.
Yeah, and the reason
and
that
because his wife was smart and a lawyer.
Yeah, well, but his wife was originally a registered Republican when she was young, and you know, so and they probably, if it weren't for the fact that the Republicans have all that crazy stuff about, you know, anti-gay marriage and, you know, wanting to limit a woman's right to choose, you know, what they do with their own bodies kind of thing, that forces people like that into the Democratic Party, I do believe. Because, you know, so at least there, you know, you kind of...
Is that why the party has moved so much to the right?
I think that's been...
Because we have a lot of people who would have been Republicans.
If all these wedge issues weren't brought so much into the forefront, you know, whether it's choice, you know, a woman's right to choose, gays in the military, gay marriage, which the gay and lesbian community wasn't even fighting for. That's one of the things that I think is hysterical.
Until people started making it illegal.
Right. You know, and all they were wanting was basically the civil union thing so that they, you know, they had inheritance rights and, you know, power of attorney for when their partner falls ill, all that kind of stuff that any of us that would be in a heterosexual marriage take for granted. That's all that they wanted. It was the conservative machine and the Christian right that went all just lunatic and decided to start referring it as to, see, they're wanting to get married. And this is another thing. The United States is the only country that I know of that cannot understand that actually marriage is a civil legal thing and the church part is only ceremony. You know, in Europe, like when I was living in Germany, friends of ours got married and there were two ceremonies. There was the civil ceremony where they actually were legally married and signed the paperwork. And then there was the church service. Only in America, as far as I know, is it the preacher gets to sign all the civil paperwork and all of that. So it's this is another one of those really, really twisted things that that American people in general don't even understand how the whole thing works. That when they get married in their church, the church has nothing to do with it except for ceremony, and you're allowed to do that. However you want to celebrate, you know, the joining of two lives together, you do that, you know. But what it comes down to is that it's a legal document. It's a legal arrangement. It's actually a financial contract when you get down to it. And that's all it is. And that's all that, as far as I understand, the LGBT community ever wanted. And again, it's the use of these things and turning them into wedge issues, which is just so stupid and counterproductive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was someone on the TV right after the press conference today who was saying that after Bill Clinton, that now, you know, that after the 90s, now America doesn't want to have sex scandals anymore. Or doesn't want to talk about sex scandals.
Move on. Nothing to see here. These are not the robots you're looking for.
Right.
Oh, it's just madness, Cassie.
I was laughing so hard at the TV today.
I mean, you couldn't write better scripts than this. And, you know, I just find the whole thing tragic, funny. I feel for the guy's children. I feel for his wife. I think that they have been dragged through, you know.
I bet they are pissed at him. I bet they don't even
want to
talk to him.
I would imagine. I mean, to sit there and say, you know, you go take off to do that, and you leave us holding the bag for you, covering
it. Answer all the questions, and, you know, and his kids are never going to like Father's Day ever again.
You know.
That I can tell you right now.
Maybe a few years down the line, and mom meets a nice progressive guy and gets remarried. Maybe then they'll be able to. But, you know, it's a Hallmark holiday anyway. You know, it's a manufactured holiday by card makers, as far as I'm concerned. You know, all that stuff. It's just a way to sell stuff. I just feel really bad for that family. I feel bad for the people of his state who got, you know, I mean, yeah, they voted the moron in, but even when they voted him in, they didn't expect a guy that was going to just, like, go off and go walkabout and vanish and leave the state unmanned, especially when there is a system called, you know, there's this guy, the lieutenant governor, who could run things when he wasn't there. I mean, that's what it's for. But, you know, it comes down to just being selfish, Cass. I think it just comes down to being selfish. But, Cass, I tell you what, I got someone else who wants to ring in. Really great to talk to you, darling. It's always good to talk to you.
Good talking to you. And I'm glad you're back on the radio.
All right. Thank you, darling.
And thank you, Gail, for loaning the laptop. and get John back on the radio.
Right on. Thank you, darling. You have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks. That's always fun. That was Cassie. Okay, hold on a minute with the phone calls. Because we're gonna take our top of the hour break here in just a moment. But, you know, Cassie, you know, she's a teenager. She can see this from the Sanford's kid's point of view, and I think she's absolutely right. You know, this guy, I think, is probably done in the eyes of his children. I can relate to that too. I come from a family where, you know, dad went off and had his thing, and it ended up destroying the family, and it didn't do much good for my relationship with my father. Humans make mistakes, but it's hypocrisy that does the the real damage. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, folks, I'm going to play some music here. I might play two because I still want to try and get this audio from the rally happening. I'm going to see if I can get that happening, and I think I have a very, very kind of special call getting ready to come up at the top of the hour. I'm going to try and get that all arranged. So if you bear with me for just a few minutes, let's see, what are we going to play? Yeah, see, it's a little fumbly over here because I don't have things set up the way that they normally are. All right, we're going to do one of these. Okay, just bear with me a sec. And we'll start with this. A little bit of Sin City, Emmylou Harris and Beck. We'll see you back in a few minutes. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, America's Liberal Voice.
It'll swallow you in if you've got some money to burn. Take it home right away. You've got 3 years to pay, but Satan is waiting.
never makes no sense. It never makes no sense. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Armageddon is a deadly day. Armageddon is a deadly way. They're coming for you every day. While senators on a holiday. The army recruiters in the parking lot. Hustling the kids, they're juggling pots. Listen, young man, listen to my plan. Gonna make you money, gonna make you a man. Bam, bam. Here's what you get. An M16 and a Kevlar vest. You might come home with one less leg, but this thing will surely keep a bullet at your chest. So come on, come on, sign up, come on. This one's nothing like Vietnam, except for the bullet, except for the bombs, except for the youth that's gone. So we keep it on till you're coming home. Higher and higher. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. So we keep it on till you're coming home. Higher and higher. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Yeah. Tell me, President, tell me if you will. How many people does a smart bomb kill? How many of them do you think we got? The general says we never miss a shot. And we never, ever, ever keep a body count. We're killing so efficiently we can't keep count. In the Afghan hills, the rebels still fighting. Opium fields keep on providing the best heroin that money can buy. And nobody knows where Osama been hiding. The press conferences keep on lying like we don't know. So we keep it on.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Well, it ain't Bob. It's John Fox. Welcome back, folks. We're in the final hour, and I think we're going to do the rally audio tomorrow. Wrong machine, all that kind of thing. And, you know, that's just the deal. So, anyway, just bear with me a second. I'm going to get a very, very, very special call in here. So, this could be really, really, really good fun. Welcome back to Head On, folks. John Fox here, filling in for Bob Kincaid, as I will do for the rest of the week while he's in D.C. And, this is great fun. Haven't done this in a while. I've been off air for ages, and this has just been really, really, really good fun. I hope you all have been enjoying it. And like I said, and I've been really bad. If you wanna email me, it's John JON at headonradionetwork.com. Love to hear from you. And I'm really looking forward to doing this rally audio tomorrow. I apologize for not quite having that together the way that I wanted. And like I said, unfortunately, it's on the wrong machine, and it won't play out holes that I can get at the moment. And that's just the way it goes. And come on, Bruce, ring. Oops, I just gave it up. I'm expecting here a call in just a moment from my former co-host, the one, the only Mr. Bruce Birch. And for those of you that might be new to the Head On Radio Network, back when we first put this network together, Bruce and I hosted... Ah-ha-ha, ah-ha-ha. Just bear with me a second here, folks. We're about to get him here. Mr. Bruce Birch?
Yes, Mr. John Fox, and how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, man. I was just kind of giving a little bit of background because, you know, now we're Bob's show is now being replayed on the Malloy stream after Mike's done. And I was just
so
I was just trying to give a little background on the fact that back when this network was first started, it was one of the two programs that made or the three programs that made up the beginning of this network was the one that you and I did together every weekend called Fourth Estate Radio, which I still think is one of the most proud things I've ever done. You know,
it's a great show. It's a lot of great fun.
Yeah, yeah. We always had great fun. So everyone, this is Bruce Birch, one of my best friends who I've still never been able to hug, and that's just the weirdness of doing things via the internet.
from how many miles? How many 10,000 miles away or something? Some ungodly number, 20,000 miles away.
Well, 20,000 miles away, you'd almost be completely lapping the planet. But yeah, it's.
I guess we would, wouldn't we? See, there's my geography. I'm not the geography guy. Hit me with a history question, and I got you. But don't ask me where Buenos Aires is. Oh, wait a minute. Isn't that where Mark Sanford's girlfriend is? Sorry.
I don't know if you caught it, but I reckon we should just say that he was off climbing the Twin Peaks of Argentina.
Ave Maria. Anyway, I've been listening to you know John. I've listened to the show for a little while there. It blows my mind how Mark Sanford's situation gets you didn't do this, but reading the story on the internet, how you know George Bush taught me there was more than one internet. So I can't let that go. But it just amazes me how Mark Sanford's story completely eclipses what's going on, you know, in the Middle East right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a bit of that problem that we have with the modern media. You know, the sensational story will always win out over what might actually be important. Now, yeah, I mean, I did go kind of jump on them because I love jumping on GOP Republican right-wing hypocrisies. But, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, anything that the media can throw up. I mean, I even am starting to get a bit of the gripes with the Huffington Post because, you know, I understand like they're trying to do the magazine idea and they have the pop culture stuff, which is fine. But like they're running a poll of whose hosts are hotter in business television, CNBC
what?
Or Fox Business.
Oh, my Lord.
And I'm just like, now, wait a minute. I mean, you're playing right into the what is one of the big problems is the fact that, you know, American Idol gets more people voting on it than a bloody election for president. I mean, it's just insane.
Well, and it what blows my mind about, you know, and we talked about this a lot on Fourth Estate. Actually, I think it was the impetus for the creation of Fourth Estate Radio was the fact that the news people now are they've blurred the line between reporting and creating news.
Yeah.
And content, you know. And it's almost, I mean, you know, it's and they create they, you know, they purposefully make mistakes. They purposefully do things to fill up, you know, the 24-hour news cycle. I mean, case in point, I guess Sanford was identified as misidentified as a Democrat on faux news. You know?
Didn't they do the same?
And it's like, you know, of course they had to do that, and they've done it so many times.
They did it with the Larry Craig thing too. I remember that one specifically.
And I think they also did it. They also did it with Tom DeLay.
Oh yeah, they did.
Back when the hammer was getting hammered. You know, instead they on the air it was that and it was not a misstep. It was he was misidentified, I think, 7 or 8 times by the same host. I mean, it was like even after he was corrected, he still, you know, called him a Democrat from Texas. But what do you think about this resurgence? I'm going to ask you this, John. What do you think about this resurgence of Newt Gingrich?
Man, it's a bit creepy. It's really a bit creepy, you know. I mean, you know, this resurgence of the idea of the contract on America. You know, I think he's really trying to posture himself for 2012 because the Republicans are just so just eating themselves alive. And, you know, yes. he is a clever guy. When he first kind of started popping up, he was sounding very kind of reasonable and whatnot. And then it just progressively went into right-wing nutbagville.
Right-wing Freeperville. You know, and I think that the place, it's like, you know, you look at this guy, and it's like he's the uncle that keeps coming to the family gathering that nobody wants to see, and he's the loudest one in the bunch. And he drinks way too much Kool-Aid, you know, and talks about, you know, his days in the war as if there was something glorious. I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Well,
and we keep inviting him back to the party. We keep saying, you know, these people, they piss me off. These people keep inviting him back as if, you know, he's created some sort of new paradigm. And it's the same old tired garbage, you know. I mean, he comes to work, he takes off the robe and the hood and puts on a suit and sits down and says, "Hey, you know, we the Republican Party now will, you know, we got Michael Steele. We
well,
we've changed."
Well, you know,
which is absolute horse patootie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The other thing that I find interesting too, though, is the loudest, most visible voices on the right are not even elected. I mean,
yeah.
I think that really is one of the fundamental things that you have to look at with this situation. The two
You're
biggest,
right.
it's Gingrich and it's Limbaugh, and you know, and I think it just goes to show how just screwed and lost that party is at the moment. And what I'm kind,
well,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, what I was going to say is that it's a lot easier for them to have these voices as the voices of their party because these folks have no accountability.
Absolutely.
You know, and they can say, see, this is the paradox, or the I don't want to say the paradox, but this is sort of the way that it seems to work is that, or at least in my observance, and, you know, I'm sure I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that, you know, a lot of times these parties, you know, Democrat and Republican both, will put out a voice that is far to the left or far to the right of where the party stands at the moment so that those people who are elected can say, oh, gosh, you know, I don't actually think that. But these people do appeal to the least common denominator in us all, you know. And I'm thinking specifically Rush Limbaugh. Of course, I'm going to talk about the right because, you know, they're evil and they, you know, don't need to share the same air that I'm breathing. But when we're talking about a Rush Limbaugh type or a Newt Gingrich type or even a Michael Steele who even, you know, Michael Steele hates himself. I can't explain anything else that he does except for he has a tremendous amount of self-hatred. Why would any man who is in the position that he's in put himself in the same room with folks who, you know, absolutely hate what he, you know, his entire race? But,
well, yeah, and you know, it was such a calculated move, you know. The right wing, the extreme right wing, will say, you know, Obama only got elected because he was black, and we can sit there and, you know, all day long prove why that wasn't so. However, we'd get hammered if we said that Michael Steele is only in the job because he's black. And that was obviously a calculated move.
Absolutely was.
You know, as a way to cover their own ass to say, oh, you know, you can't call us racist. Look, we got this guy running the party, and he's running the party. He's running the party into the ground. I mean that whole you know, gotta hip hop the GOP, and you sitting there going, man, you know, be honest, just be honest, man, you know, and.
I
sometimes also wonder if, you know, they're like going, you know, if the machine of the party said, you know what, we're screwed for at least the next 4 years, so let's not put one of our top ranking people in the job at the moment. Let's put someone up that we can discard as having been a mistake.
Yeah.
During...
Or put someone up who can be vocal and crazy about it and make headlines, because guess what? And you and I both well know, any press is good press, whether it's bad or good.
Absolutely.
you know, and putting somebody out there who's going to create some headlines for them reminds people that there is a small minority of conservative people out there. And then, you know, when the time comes up for elections, they put somebody who looks, you know, a David Duke character, who looks and sounds sensible, you know, but underneath, you know, of course, we know what's going on there. But, you know, and then by doing that, of course, they appeal again to the sensible, you know, middle road American who, you know, I gotta tell you, John, I, watching the Obama election and watching all the elections that I've watched over the years, I really have gotten tired of the swing voter. Because, you know, it's the same, this is the same guy who goes to the movie theater and doesn't make up his mind until he gets there what he's gonna see. The same guy who stands in line in front of you at the wherever you're going to go eat and, like, for 5 minutes trying to figure out whether he wants mashed potatoes or french fries. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I also think the swing voter is a bit of kind of like a bullshit label. But I also think that within those people are, the like you said, the completely indecisives, and they're always going to go with whatever they think the majority is going to do. And
right.
So they don't know anything about the issues, don't want to actually, you know, spend some time and be analytical about it. They're just going to wait until the last minute, see what looks
yep.
like the bulk of the people are probably going to do, and then jump on board and do it. This
yep.
last election, I think. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, John.
I think the last election, There wasn't quite as much of that because of the disdain for the Bush administration and
yeah.
what had gone down for the last 8 years. So I think whoever the Democrats put up was a pretty surefire winner.
Right.
And
which
so,
happens to be a darn good. He's probably. I used to say Bill Clinton was the best Republican president we ever had. I got to change my story on that. I really think Obama's turning out to be one of the best Republican presidents we ever had. I'm really struggling with him right now.
So am I, man. So am I. But I was never under any illusions that he was anything but a centrist. However, I did hold out this bit of, and here comes that word again, hope.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, but, you know, that he did seem to be a guy that could go out there and actually listen, which I thought was going to be at least an opportunity to educate him on issues and maybe be able to, you know, turn policy direction in ways that we kind of wanted, which is actually really healthy if you can honestly have a debate about something and people get shown things that they didn't know before, and, you know, maybe adjust their position a bit, that would have been fine. But I am really struggling with this guy in a whole lot of ways, but then it ends up putting those of us that are on the progressive left in this really, really weird situation of, okay, yeah, we voted this guy in, things are not going so well, and
yeah.
you end up having, you know, that 30% go, ah, see, he's screwed up the whole thing, and all context of everything that happened over just the last 8 years just goes straight out the frickin' window, and you
yeah.
can't have a real discussion about this stuff. And you,
right.
I find myself on the back foot defending Obama when I actually don't feel like I should be having to defend him. I think we should be looking at what's gone on, you know, for a while. And, you know,
yeah,
and
not only that, but we need to continue as media persons to pick, you know, point out the faults and motivate folks to
yeah.
have their voices be heard either via talk shows or via writing letters or talking to the congressman. I mean, or senator. It blows my mind. You know what's happened with the whole coal situation with Obama has just really made me very disappointed.
Well, and you know, this is one of those things where, you know, I have to wonder, is this one of those situations where it's actually showing how unbelievably corrupted the actual system is? Because he did say the right things And he's,
of course he did.
And he's now going completely back on them, you know, having secret meetings with the coal companies and whatnot. And it just really has to make me wonder, you know, how much pull does this industry have on...
Incredible amount.
Yeah, I mean,
incredible amount.
I always knew this. And, you know, do they have so much influence and control that even a guy that has the right intentions and some of the right ideas ends up being, you know, having his legs cut out from underneath him and then ends up just going along with the same thing. You know, we're seeing the same thing here in Australia, man. Kevin Rudd got elected very much on the anti-Howard vote and climate change. And now the climate change bill that they put up is suddenly this wimp-ass, pussy-nothing bill.
Right.
But thankfully, with our system, the Greens made gains in the last election. It was the Greens that actually kicked Labor over with their preferences to win the election. And we have the Greens actually being the voice of reason on virually every issue here.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Because
you know, any change that we're going to have is going to have to, you know, we have so much to overcome in the United States with our elected officials, and you know, the big money has so much influence that the only way that you can really affect any kind of change is through sheer numbers, and you know, motivating folks to you know, make their voices heard is the biggest. I think it is the number one, should be the number one priority of all grassroots organizations right now, because there's so much money at the table that the only way to drown that money out is through sheer voices, through sheer votes.
Now,
we don't really have that option here as much, you know, as you do down in Australia.
Right. Now, I want to throw something at you, Bruce, and I'm curious to see what you
Dude, you better have a strong arm because it's a long way. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
Oh, this just feels so good, man. I feel like I've just taken a time warp back 4 years.
Okay.
So, just like we kind of saw that happened here in Australia, where the right-wing coalition overstepped, and the Greens got together to put Labor, the other big of the two parties, into power. But the Greens got a bunch more seats in local government and in federal and in the federal parliament, and you're starting to see this third party thing come in. But we have a system that allows for third and fourth and fifth parties. Now, in the United States, this is what I'm hoping is going to happen. If Obama doesn't get with the program, and I really think health care is going to be the make or break for him. If he doesn't actually do it right, he's going to lose all the support from the left that he ever had. And here's what I think what might happen, Bruce. I think we might be in a process where the two-party dominant system is actually going to not so slowly die. You have the GOP eating themselves from the inside, and you basically have a third of the country that's backing them. And
well,
then
conservatism is a cancer. Form of cancer. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So you have them, you know, basically, you know, eating themselves into mediocrity and then oblivion.
Right.
Now you have, so then you had, you know, the people got behind the other side because it was the only choice that they had. I think the GOP will eventually split between the centrists and the reasonables. And the nutbag racists and climate change deniers, they're going to split. So, you know, and who gets to keep the GOP name? That'll probably be the big question. But here, let me just finish the thought. Then I think what may actually end up happening is we're going to end up having some sort of third and fourth party that's going to actually not just draw from the disenchanted Republicans, but they're going to actually draw down the support for the Democrats as well. And it'll end up being where we have maybe one majority party, which is the Democrats, but less so of a majority, and then actually having a growing third and fourth parties finally kind of come out of it, one being an extreme right and one actually being the beginnings of an actual progressive party, which is something that we don't have. And it's one of the things, like Bill Maher's been brilliant lately, you know, where he said, you know, the Democrats are what the Republicans were in the 80s, and the Republicans have moved off to the nut house.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the Republican Party, and it's really interesting, you know, watching their implosion. And I want to preface what I want to say about that with this is that they were really impressed. You got to give them props during the reign of George Jr. They stayed on message. They kept their rank and file in rank and file.
Yeah.
The organizing and the way that they communicated their ideas to the world was incredible. I mean, you know, you and I battled against it every freaking day.
Oh yeah.
You know, for you know, a year or better, and you know, and watching that process and seeing how organized it was and how they were able to pull it off without a hitch was until, of course, you know, the economy tanked. When the economy tanked, you know, there really wasn't. They really had nothing to say about that. That anybody was going to listen to. But you know, watching the ability to organize. You know, I think that if there were going to be any problem out of the Republican Party in the near future, it's going to be if they're able to get on message and have that organizational structure get put back in place. You know, it fell apart when Bush left the White House. I mean, you know, case in point. We were talking about the mouthpieces being Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh. Well, you know, Rush Limbaugh was a mouthpiece before, but what he was doing was, you know, he was given talking. You know, they used to have this daily fax that they would send out to all the right-wing talk show hosts. And, you know, at some point during their three-hour or two-hour program, they would work those points in and you know, all, you know, so that you heard the same message. If you flipped from Rush Limbaugh to Glenn Beck to Michael I don't want to say these names on the air. People, don't go listen to these guys. Just don't do it. But, you know, yeah, I'm not going to give them free airplay. But, you know, you could flip from show to show and almost get the same message from every person. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference in the Democratic Party is that the Democratic Party doesn't want to lower itself to the idea of propaganda, you know.
Right.
However, there is a thing called publicity and public relations, and I think that the Democratic Party could learn a little bit more on, you know, getting that message out there. And you know, it, you know, Frank Luntz talks about this, and George Lakoff also, you know, framing the message and going with that frame and not deviating from it. You know, if you repeat the same thing enough times, people will begin to repeat it themselves.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it's about getting a positive message out there. But anyway, I said that to say this. going around the mountain to get to the tunnel on the other side to get back. Anyway, you know, I would absolutely love to see a political party founded on ideals that it will not sway from. And I think that is the biggest crime of all political parties thus far in our nation, in this nation, it has been that, you know, it ceases to be about principles. It ceases to be about, you know, ideas and ideals and principles, and begins and becomes to be completely just about power.
Right, and you know, you just actually made me think of something, kind of a train of thought that I've heard Barney Frank go on about, and a lot of people don't like him, but I'm sorry, I actually kind of dig Barney Frank.
He's all right.
But like, I've heard him talk, you know, on a couple of issues, like when it's talked about, talking about healthcare and talking about the bailout and whatnot, and the where you have Democrats that are fighting against Democrats, you know, keeping them from doing actually the right thing. And it's, people have brought up about, you know, well, maybe the progressive Democrats should go and start their own party. And he said, but wait a minute. He said, how about those that aren't standing by what the Democratic Party was founded on go and start their own party? Why should I have to leave my own party? You know, and I can understand, and like, I can understand his point of view there, you know, saying like, you know, on many things, I'm on the progressive side. Why should I have to go and start a new party when I'm the one that's actually sticking to the tenets of what my party was founded on originally? So it's a really complicated thing. I do think that the party system is going to end up going through a massive shakeup of some sort over the next decade. Because
I would love to see a bunch of small parties with a coalition, with a coalition atmosphere, so that they have to work together to a certain degree to get their agendas on the ticket, or to get their agendas addressed in the halls of Congress. You know, because then you have, oh, it's so much more boisterous and just a lot more exciting. And you know, of course, we love exciting in talk radio. So, you know,
we've been having a bit of that down here. We've had this, and only in Australia could we have this. We've had Ute Gate, you know, because Ute is what we call a pickup truck. And This has been the most hysterical thing because, you know, we have question time where the government has questions thrown at them from their side and from the opposition. And this whole big thing got made about Kevin Rudd was loaned or given a ute to help him with his campaign, okay? Now, later on down the road, Rudd, you know, the Labor Party wins the election, Rudd becomes prime minister. And part of what he was working on to help stimulate the economy was he was working on a thing that they were calling the Rudd Bank, which was basically going to be a way of guaranteeing loans for parts of the auto industry to try and keep them rolling for the moment, right? Because the banks weren't giving the short-term credit that they needed to be able to, you know, give car loans and whatnot. So all of a sudden the opposition comes up with this email about how one car dealer was getting special treatment from the government, you know, and it happened to be this car dealer friend who gave Rudd this, you know, like cheap ute to use, right? So the leader of the opposition, this guy Malcolm Turnbull, who is just a tosser, man, just out there screaming, calling for his resignation and all this other stuff. And mind you, the opposition leader used to actually be CEO of an internet service provider, and it's all based on this email that came out of the Treasury Department. We have now learned that the email was a complete and utter hoax.
Really?
It was actually created, and very possibly by a mole that the opposition had in Treasury, that this has been going back for years of leaking information. And if you could watch the fireworks that have been going on in question time this past week, it has been some of the most entertaining stuff I have ever watched in my life, man. And, you know, and the media...
One side out, do the other, you know.
Ah, but it's been so beautiful because you probably came in after I kind of went on about this, that Kevin Rudd actually... You know, even though I'm pissed off at him about the whole climate change bill and all that kind of thing, he did actually listen to guys like Paul Krugman and the rest of the economists out there that said, this is the time to spend money, right? And so Kevin did. Kevin and the Labor Party came up with the stimulus plan, you know, infrastructure projects, all that. But included in that were actually cash deposits straight into people's bank accounts of a minimum of $900, and it all depended on like how many children you had and all that kind of thing. And it was direct cash injection for people to be able to go out and spend. And they were told to, like, they said, you know, yeah, we tell you to save money and all that, and they said, but right now we really need you to go out and spend to try and slow down, you know, the increase in unemployment and all that. So, you know, the opposition sitting there going, you know, screamed all about deficits and interest rates and all this other kind of nonsense. But a few months down the road, all the Australian economists are coming back saying that the stimulus package did what it was supposed to do. And Australia would be in
How many citizens, I mean, what's the population there, John?
I think we're just about 25 million.
25 million. So that's about 10% of the population here, or thereabouts. That's
yeah.
300 million, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, 300 million here. So if they got $900 ahead, we need to have about 9,000 ahead to be able to have the same kind of effect that you guys had there.
Well,
I'm not an economist, but I'm just trying to, like, do the numbers and multiply and...
The stimulus package all came together, if I'm not mistaken, to be about $32 billion.
Okay.
For a country of under 25 million people. So, you know, you basically worked out to be about $1,000, maybe 1,500 being spent per person, both in direct stimulus and these infrastructure projects and whatnot, making up for investment that hadn't been made over the last few years. So the opposition has had nothing to get them on, right? All the boo-hooing about everything, and the economists all come back, and you watch the report saying, you know, these are the numbers, yeah, we're still on a decline, but, you know, if Rudd hadn't done what he did, everything would be much, 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 much worse than it is now, and it had the desired effect. So
I'm not happy with the stimulus money at all, or this whole stimulus package, and I got to tell you, because I have not yet seen one job created here at all. I mean, it blows my mind. You know, we've got this list of stimulus money here of projects, you know, and the money, the projects, is already going to contractors who already have work, who haven't, they're not going to hire anybody, you know. So basically what they're doing, it's almost like it was a package to preserve jobs that were already, where people were already working.
Yeah. I agree with you there, and I do think that still some of what Obama has done as far as the infrastructure projects probably hasn't come down to be visible yet, and it's similar here. I mean, it's, you know, all like within a year of all this stuff having been done. So I mean, those are going to take a fair bit longer to see the actual real results. And over there, there's a couple of states that have tried to pass laws to stop the federal government from putting their signs up on those projects that say, you know, this construction project is part of the stimulus, you know, going, oh, it's just propaganda and all that. Well, you know what, that's actually just informing the public that, you know, that all that money we spent, this is one of the things. And I think that's a good thing. And so similar to the opposition here, it's like anything to detract attention from anything positive that has gone on. So that's why I think that, you know, the opposition here went and without even checking, I mean, a guy who used to be CEO of an internet service provider doesn't think far enough to have his people go check the validity of the email that he was hanging this massive attack on.
Sounds like Dan Rather.
Oh, man, it was just unbelievable. It was hysterical. And now this Malcolm Turnbull guy is so under fire. I have a feeling he's going to be dumped as leader of the opposition within a couple of weeks, because he was a bit of an experiment anyway, kind of like Michael Steele.
Yeah.
You know, no one really intended for him to hold the job that long, but it was a way of kind of, oh, we can go down that road right now because it's really not going to have any impact, because this opposition here is as just in the wilderness as the Republicans are in the states.
You can't screw stuff up any worse than it already is.
Right. Yeah.
not by much.
Yeah, you know, but I really find this whole thing's been fascinating, and if you have a chance, just go to the Sydney Morning Herald and just kind of look for Turnbull and Utegate. And just read a little bit about it, and you'll see that this has just been really hysterical. And I kind of picked Rudd as being a really good shot for Labor as a leader and a possible, you know, decent prime minister before he was even leader of the party, right? And I think I'm also seeing the future of that party now, because there's another guy. A guy by the name of Anthony Albanese, who is this kind of slightly pudgy, geeky-looking guy. But I'm telling you, man, this is the kind of guy you want in politics. He gets on that floor, and he hammers the opposition. And he has facts, details, history, context, and he also knows how the government works better than anybody in the House, and he just tears
people. Sounds like our guy from California. His name escapes me now. He was on the he was the one who was building all of these dossiers on the abuses of the Iraq War. He's a representative. Anyway, I'm sure somebody will refresh my memory after I get off the air, but he's now, I think, head of the Banking and Finance Subcommittee at the House of Representatives.
Oh, shit. Down the memory hole.
Now, that would be the lack of memory hole there.
Yeah.
Man, I'm so proud. You know, when I log in and listen to the show and listen to Head On, I am so proud that you guys are still kicking it. And it just, you know, my goal is to come back on the air sometime this fall.
Yeah.
And Bob and I have discussed it a few times. And I mean, this is no formal announcement. It's just, you know, I really am, you know, every time I'm very humbled by the dedication that you guys have poured into this network. It's awe-inspiring to see the kind of commitment and dedication that you guys have put into this. And I don't know if people let you know how much they appreciate it, but I, for one, as a former host, it makes me, you know, speechless to even consider how amazing it is that you guys are still doing what you're doing. And, you know, it just shows really, really a profound dedication.
Well, man,
that one guy out here appreciates everything that you guys are doing.
Well, man, you know, you were a seminal part of us first launching this whole
seminal
or something. I don't know. if I did, I'm not admitting to it. No, but
I didn't have relations with that seminal. I'm not in Florida. I meant Seminole. Anyway.
Never mind. You know, I did start this show at 8 a.m. my time, just to remind you of that. So.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, when I haven't been on in a while, and I'm kind of doing this with a bit of a hodgepodge rig at the moment, and it's done really, really well today. I'm so happy. And
the universe smiles.
Man, but you know, the chat room just kind of like went nuts the fact that I was on, and that's just so heartening because, you know, I do my thing normally on the weekends, you know, and I'm kind of like not sure, you know, how crucial it is and all of that, and to come on and take Bob's slot for a bit, which you and I did a few times back in the day, you know, when he give us the keys to the car. And
oh God! You remember that Fender? Oh my God!
Yeah.
I mean, you know, getting the paint to match was a bitch, man.
Yeah. But it was the burritos in the back seat that I think really caused the problem.
you know, Bob gives us the keys to the car. What do? Drive to Mexico and pick up a bunch of illegals and bring them across the border.
Oh, Bruce. Hey, man, you know, this has been just such a blast. And, I really hope that, you know, you are able to make moves to get back on air. Because I always felt, and here we go, the back padding session. But I always felt that when you were doing your daily show, that you showed more natural talent for this form than anyone that we have had come through the network. You know,
well,
I mean, Bob and Guy, old pros, totally different thing. But those of us that decided to do this out of, you know, and were new at it, you know, you just always had a really, really great just kind of persona on air, make people feel very comfortable on air. And, you know, you're my long-distance brother, man, and always will be.
But thank you, John, for that. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say. You render me speechless again. I did want to give you an update just as a personal note, and I know this is probably, you know, you probably need to go run to. By the way, play After the Revolution on a bumper if you can tonight. But anyway, because now we can buy stuff. Anyway,
right.
I had a little girl about almost a month ago, and she had some. Bob mentioned it on the air one night. It was the night that I had the day that she was born. She had a lot of medical problems when she was born, and was in the neonative intensive care unit for about 7 days, but she is now out and is she's found her lungs. Oh joy. And so she's doing really, really great, and I just wanted to relay to everybody who said a prayer or had a moment of silence or sent out to the universe to help this little girl get better that it has definitely worked and she's doing wonderfully well. Her name is Claudia Sage.
Beautiful
and,
name.
And life is marching on, my friend, and you know, I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate you, and you're doing a fantastic job, and so I certainly hope that you continue with this, John. Get back on the air with a, you know, regular program, because I love listening to the Aussie rant.
Yeah, well, my new machine, replacement machine, is on the way, and it looks like the next 2 weeks I'm going to be able to get Foxed Up back on Sunday nights as a regular thing again, and it's just been purely computer death, and that was it. And, boy, we found out. Joe Vecchio found a computer, actually, to donate to me, and then Bob went and looked about shipping it to me, and it was then to ship it to Australia was just, like, insanely expensive. And all this customs, blah, 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 blah. So we've had to go about it a different direction, but, hey, you know, this is what we do, and I'm glad that I was able to get this together. And having you on has just been an absolute pleasure, man.
I know talking with you is always great fun. Always
all right.
Great fun.
Well, I'm going to be here for the next couple of days, so, man, you know, don't hesitate to ring in.
Yeah, I'll ring in.
Anytime, bro.
Ring in. And I just have a great show tonight, and you know what, man, keep the faith, and as always, right, what did I always used to say? It's your democracy, and it's not a spectator sport, right?
Yep, absolutely, man.
So have a great night, John. Talk to you soon.
Take care, my brother. Love you.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. And that was the infamous Bruce Birch. And hopefully, you know, maybe in the next year we'll actually have both Bruce and Peter back on air. And what would make it even more perfect is if Joe Vecchio could get back on air one day. Because, you know, all these people have been part of this amazing experiment called the Head On Radio Network. And we have, I sometimes it just really spins me out when I think that, you know, we're getting on 4 years of doing this. And, you know, it's been dicey at times. We've, you know, pushed the envelope when it came to technology versus budget versus everything else. And, you know, we're still here. We're still here. And with that, I'll do the only time I'm going to do this tonight, because we're getting close to the end of things. But, you know, this is your network, folks. And the only reason we're able to do this is if you all kick in $5, $10, whatever it is that you can afford. We have our regular supporters, which we would have been gone a long time ago if it hadn't been for you. New listeners, if you like what you hear, you know, and I know times are tight, but if you like what you hear and you value having a place to have your voice heard, please consider heading to headonradionetwork.com, and you'll see a little donation form, blah, blah, blah. You can even set up a recurring, like, $5 or $10 one if you want. And also you can check out the contact form if you want to do something by snail mail if you're not into the PayPal thing. So, you know, I don't like to go and do the handout kind of thing too often, but it's unavoidable, and it's not too long down the road where we are going to be going to do this Netroots Nation thing, and I think that it's going to be very possibly one of the most important things that the Head On Radio Network has ever done, and I'm hoping that our presence there will expose us to the people that could make the best use of what we do and bring in better and longer, better and more substantial financial support. Because I think what we do here is important, and that's not, you know, self-congratulatory, you know, garbage. It's about filling the hole that exists in media. And, you know, it's just crazy that in some ways that this is one of the few places that we have, you know. But, I mean, you know, we've got Mike Malloy, and I swear to you, I don't think his show has ever been better than since they got out of any network situation, because they're able to do their show for themselves. And when people who create something are able to satisfy themselves, they usually have a much better chance of satisfying their audience. Kind of goes to that art for art's sake kind of crazy thing. And I think Betsy's asking me if I'm going to Netroots Nation. No, I wish I was. However, I'll probably be very, very busy during that time monitoring some streams and all that kind of thing, and helping ELO and the other mods in the chat room with what hopefully will turn out to be a whole bunch of new listeners. I think it's going to be a really amazing thing. And I also think that we're showing that you don't have to cost squillions of dollars to be a radio network. You know, as we said in the past when we first heard about the daily budgets of Air America when they first went on air, one day that they spent could have kept us on air for a year. 1 week of what they spent to stay on air could have kept us on the air for a year and paid some salaries. And so, I mean, that's just that little bit of context about how we make this work, you know. We don't require catering, and we don't require all that stuff. You know, I can in breaks go and make my own bloody coffee in my own bloody kitchen. And you know, it's gonna be, you know, as Betsy said, it was Joe and Betsy that pioneered, you know, the horn, the first ones representing the horn at Netroots. And so, you know, we're looking to, as far as I understand it now, we are going to be the exclusive broadcaster, and all five venues will have five consistent streams going. So, you know, it's going to be big. It's going to be heady. We still have a little bit of gear to get. I think, as far as cabling and a couple of mixers yet, because, I mean, every room requires an entire rig. Maybe not necessarily enough to, you know, do hosts and all that stuff, but it's going to be very, very cool. I'm very, very excited about that. And there are some other things in the works as well. We're actually about to start some discussions about another new show on the weekends with someone whose name I'm not going to release yet, but you all are familiar with. And I'm hoping that we're able to pull that one off. I think it'll be really, really, really cool. And just really, really awesome. just seeing in my email, someone's sitting there going, asking someone, emailing me saying there were some buffering issues with the stream. Well, hopefully, I don't see them now. Hopefully, it's cleared up. Part of, you know, dealing with a half a rig, or not a half a rig, but not a proper rig the way that I would normally do it. But like I said, we're not long off from fixing all of that. And you know, how cool is it that we get to do this? You know, and Betsy's, you know, going back to when Agnes was producing, you know, a lot of the shows where I'd hook up to West Virginia and we did it all that way. And, you know, I mean, we've been through so many changes to keep this thing going. You know, it really, really does blow my mind sometimes what we've been able to pull off, how long we've been able to keep this thing going. And, you know, we've had people come and go, and you know, and we're hoping to see Bruce and Peter and Joe make their way back, hopefully over the next year. Should be really good. And for those of you that never heard Bruce when he was doing his show. I think his archives are probably still at the White Rose Society. And if you check out the Bruce Birch program, check out one of those shows. Check out one of those shows. You know, I think when it comes, you know, he has a bit of that just kind of calm Hartman thing going on. And it was always a real pleasure. And I think that's why he and I had so much fun doing Fourth Estate, because it was, you know, you had kind of the crazy one, me, and the sane one, Bruce. But everybody was really surprised to find out that I was actually older than Bruce when he was coming off as the serious guy. But see, I always knew better. So tomorrow I will have the rally audio. I'm really I do apologize for not having that working today. I had it too complicated to explain, but it just wasn't going to work out today. But I will. It'll also give me a chance to actually go through it, which I was not able to do. So I'm a little bit more familiar with what was going on, but I do think it's something that needs to be heard. Not only that, I should, before we get out of here, I should actually give a little bit of a shout out. As I go to the Horn main page, if you haven't checked it out, there's some really great pictures that Bob shot at the rally. You have to scroll down a little bit, about halfway down the main page. You'll see photos from the front lines. And I got a really nice little email from one of the musicians that is in the shots and will also be in the audio that you hear about. And I just wanted to say that in the shots, you'll see that there's two musos there. And one is, her name is Jen Osha, and Morgan O'Kane is the banjo player. And added on to that, there's a link to the benefit CD that they have for raising money for the MTR movement. And it's auroralights.org/journey. Please go check them out. I've listened to a little bit of what they were playing at the rally, and it sounds just like great stuff. Because they're all part of this community that is the Head On Radio Network and activism for trying to make the world a better place. And they're trying to you know, stop this destructive, disgusting practice that goes on there in West Virginia, you know, and so more power to them. So check them out. Check out the photos. The photos are amazing. I mean, the one where you can see the sniper on top of the elementary school is just, that's just bizarre. But anyway, folks, this has been way, way, way too much fun. I shouldn't be allowed to have this much fun. So with that, we're going to bring this thing to a close. Thank you very much. Thank you to Bruce and Cassie for ringing in. Thanks to Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives and all that. And thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch for their support of the network and all the fine work that they do. And thanks to Gail for her laptop to make this all possible. And with that, as always, RMR, it's all for you.